Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back from joy. And we are going to touch into equanimity now. As I talk about equanimity, you might hear some things that you've already heard with relation to metta and mudita, appreciative joy and compassion, because as Sue said in the first talk, these Brahma Viharas are really different facets of the heart, one gem. And they each have their own unique energy and are there, but they work dynamically together. And so they're interactive parts making up the whole. So equanimity. Equanimity is the Pali word is upekkha, and that means to look over. And in this way, sometimes an image that's associated with upekkha is being rising above for a broader picture of how things are. So not being stuck in a very close view. You're close to the situation, but your view is broad. It seems to describe a perspective that you get with equanimity when we rise above conditions to gain a bigger picture of a situation. And there's a spaciousness to the way we are seeing the situation. This rising above doesn't mean that we're indifferent to the experience or that we're so far away from it that it doesn't matter. That would be describing indifference, which is actually the near enemy of equanimity. So as we first develop equanimity, we might find ourselves in trying to get away from the situation so that we don't react strongly to it. But equanimity is really requires a lot more, because it requires that we be close to it and still not react strongly or get overwhelmed. So equanimity touches the experience and sees it clearly, and then it rises to get a full picture. It doesn't get stuck in what's happening or get overwhelmed by it or overly enchanted by it. It's said that equanimity allows us to be equally close to all things. And that's quite a challenge when we think of pleasant versus unpleasant and our natural human preferences for wanting to be around the pleasant and not wanting to be around the unpleasant. So one thing we just touched on, one way of that equanimity allows us to do that is to help us get a broader picture, get the big picture. And another aspect of equanimity is associated with another meaning of that word, and that is that it's centered in the middle. So you're above, but you're also centered in the middle. And that's not an easy thing to do. It speaks to the quality that brings us balance, because equanimity is associated with balance, not overly attached, not overly rejecting. With equanimity, we can get close to things that have a strong pleasant or unpleasant tone to them, and we're not bowled over. We remain upright and centered. Roshi Joan Halifax leads a guided meditation where she asks people to have a strong back, not rigid, but a soft front. And I think that might have been mentioned already in today's talk, because it is also associated with being compassionate. But it is a way to embody and have a vision of what your aspiration is that you can stand straight, but you're still very sensitive and touched by what's going on. The far enemy of equanimity is reactivity. So I'm sure we all are aware of being anxious and agitated and overwhelmed. And certainly we have so much polarity and so much that we're going through in this time that it's really easy to get triggered into reactions. And so this quality of equanimity is really something that will help us in this time. Let's see. So we have to go beyond our habitual responses to things, and we have to be able to understand one of the strengths of equanimity is that it understands the three characteristics of phenomena and accepts them. So by developing our awareness that things are impermanent, they are impersonal, and they are imperfect, that in itself is building equanimity. And equanimity, we were talking about the balance between wisdom and compassion, or the heart and mind. Definitely, equanimity enables us to balance those two things. And equanimity has a lot of wisdom to add to our Brahma Viharas. Equanimity, accepting the wisdom of the three characteristics of phenomena, that's what builds the strength in our back. So that we can become grounded. Equanimity has a strong feeling of groundedness and unshakability, but sensitivity. So that's the trick. You know, it's very easy to go into the near enemy and just cut off and say, I don't care. But this is requiring deep investigation, deep understanding of the way things are, and acceptance, and then being able to hold emotions that can be very triggering or overwhelming. So we come here to the eight worldly winds that we're studying in SIMS this month. And equanimity is very frequently associated with the eight worldly winds. So the eight worldly winds, as some of you may know, are the ups and downs of life. And the ones that are spoken of in the Lokavipati Sutta that the Buddha spoke of are the pairs of pleasure and pain, praise and blame. I wrote them down here. Pleasure, pain, praise and blame, fame and shame, or fame and disrepute, and loss, gain and loss. And I have a story about the eight worldly winds and equanimity that just, it's kind of a good luck, bad luck story. Our co-teacher Tim last Monday night talked about a story that I've heard called good luck, bad luck, but that's the story of the farmer loses his horse and everyone says, oh, you poor person. And he says, yeah, maybe, maybe so, maybe not. And then the horse comes back with another horse. And so now he has two horses. And then I think the next thing, so then everybody says, oh, great, good luck, you know. And then his son rides the new horse and gets bucked off the horse and breaks his leg. And so everybody says, oh, that's bad luck. And the farmer says, you see, the farmer has a lot of equanimity. And he says, well, maybe so, maybe not. And then the army comes to recruit a young man, and they skip the farmer's son because he's injured. So then that's good luck because he doesn't have to go to war. So that's kind of the idea with the eight worldly winds. And my story is that last night there was some wind around here, and I suspect for you, anyone in our local area experienced that too. But for me, about 3 a.m., my cat woke me up, and I looked out the window, and my 100-year-old pear tree had toppled over. And this was a big, big pear tree. And I have a pretty small yard. And it really is kind of a scene of destruction right now. It broke my favorite bush, which was a camellia, and I've been just saying how much I love this camellia and what a delight it is to have these beautiful white flowers in my garden during the winter. And it also broke my neighbor's fence and possibly another neighbor's fence. Bad luck, right? But it could have fallen on my bedroom, because it was in position. It just, if it, the wind had blown from the northwest instead of the southwest, it would have hit my house. So it didn't hit any structures. So in that respect, you know, a bigger picture is, well, I have to look at what possibly could have happened. And the other thing about it for the bigger picture is that it gave me this good luck to have a story to go with the eight worldly winds for this talk, because it's perfect. I mean, this is the eight worldly winds. This is what happens. This is a loss, but is it? You know, more will be revealed. Right now, every time I look out the window, I kind of, you know, it's compassion too, because just destruction as far as my garden goes. So I feel, oh my gosh, you know, I've got to deal with this, and my beautiful garden is going to be changed. So I feel kind of a tug here at my heart, uncertainty. And at the same time, I have a chance to be equanimous. And so after 3 o'clock, I still had, you know, a lot of time to think about this situation. And in fact, I didn't go back to sleep. And so I thought, okay, this is equanimity. How do I, you know, how do I deal with this? Because there was a big worry. Money, you know, I have to spend money to get things fixed. And so I felt that strongly. I did my, you know, I checked in with my body, and I checked my mind, my head, which was filled with stories of when then this could happen, and maybe I really damaged the neighbor's fence, you know, irreparably. I'm going to have to pay for that. And I was, you know, kind of going on in a story. But then I went to my heart, which you need to do with the Brahmaviharas. And I think in my practice, going to the body and going to the heart, mind, heart, body, soft front, that enables me to hold what I'm feeling and connect to my heart. And that is the strongest kind of balance I think one can have, the strongest grounding one can have. So I kind of just stayed with that. I did not go back to sleep, but I kept going back to my body and back to my heart and saying, this is the way it is right now. This is the way it is. And that's another strength, I think, for equanimity that gives you the strong back, is that you're not fighting the way it is. You know, there were pieces of me fighting it, but I just kept going back. And I think that's what we have to do with these Brahma Viharas, that we don't get it in one fell swoop. And for a while, being here in the Sunday sit, I forget about it. And then I go to the kitchen and look out the window and see these broken bushes and broken bird feeders and broken fences. And I think, you know, it tugs at me. So I'm still working with it. But the worldly winds, they happen to all of us. And accepting that they happen to all of us and they go up and down. And something that Tim said, which I have also practiced with, is that if you see them as a continuum and a polarity, that they really go together. So pleasure and pain are really one thing. And gain and loss are really one thing. Because we can't always have gain, and we won't always have loss. And we can't always have pleasure, and we won't always have pain. They're one thing. And if we look at them as one, we're much more able to not go up and down with them, not grasp the pleasure and push away the pain as much. If we work with them as one thing. The Buddha said about these eight worldly winds in the Loka Vipati Sutta that there's two ways we can approach them and respond to them. And one way is really reaction, which is reactivity, which is the negative, which is the far enemy. And so he said, let's see, that an uninstructed worldling responds to these worldly winds to the, he or she comes upon, say, gain or loss or pleasure or pain or any of the other conditions and says, this gain that has come to me is impermanent. Oh, wait, that's the one who understands. Sorry. I want to read you the one that doesn't understand equanimity first. And that is the uninstructed worldling. Let's see. So, let's see here. Sorry. He or she, let's see. They are elated by praise or dejected by blame. And they respond with, you know, as though you can hold on to gain and you can get rid of loss. But the instructed noble discipline responds to them and says, the gain that has come to me is impermanent, bound up with suffering, subject to change. And that instructed noble disciple understands all these things as they really are, and they do not engross her mind or his mind. And engross is like overwhelm, or like Linda was talking about with appreciative joy, that exuberance, that over-exuberance, where you kind of go to extremes. But sometimes it's really hard to be equanimous. So the experience I had where that was more challenging to me than the tree, and we get to shake into our core. And how does equanimity work then? just a week ago, someone close to me was suffering with physical pain and was being referred to an oncologist. And so once again, I had a hard time sleeping. I would wake up and my mind would start on a long train of what if, and then, and this probably means. And I thought, this is thinking coming from my head. And it's really important with that we don't stay in our head. We have to ground and we have to connect with our heart to gain equanimity. So I think it's helpful to actually use imagery to help myself focus on the grounding heart and body. And so I thought, I remembered a guided meditation, and it was of a tree with roots in the ground, which is kind of ironic because I have used that as an image of equanimity and grounding. And here my tree toppled over and I can see the roots. So there's a limit to this image, but for the most part, I was thinking of my, I lay in bed and I just thought of myself as a tree, and that I could feel the roots in the ground, which was me actually feeling my body sensations. So it was like touching nature, touching your body, there, connecting with your body and connecting with nature and connecting with the earth. There's a real commonality there. And I would just move my mind from my head to my heart to my belly, and I could feel the in this case there was a compassion piece to it, but I think equanimity and compassion really worked together because there was suffering and I was feeling the suffering of this person, but I wanted to have, didn't want to be overwhelmed by it because I wanted to be of use. So I needed to stay grounded and available. Anyway, that helped me. I was still sad, like the tree that's moved by the branches. The branches move in the wind, the leaves do, they're touched. But I had that trunk and I had the roots. And so that helped me with that situation. Another image, which I think is really helpful, which is a physical image, is of a mountain. And because there is the idea with equanimity that you take the long view and that you're patient, and there's a keeping stillness to a mountain. So sometimes just thinking of myself in that keeping still the mountain with a broad view, that's can be helpful too. When I feel I'm being taken, you know, off into the wild blue yonder by a story. And another one that's really helpful is ballast, the idea of ballast. And my first image was this punching bag we used to have when in the 50s, we used to get this punching bag, plastic punching bag, and it would tip, it would lean, but it would bounce back, and then it would lean and bounce back. So there's this idea that, you know, you're moved, but you have enough to come back up. So there's an idea of ballast. And I have also seen teachers talk about the ballast in a ship, and that kind of enables the ship to ride through the waves or the storm because it has a ballast that keeps it coming back up. So this sense of ballast is important. And then the last one that has been really helpful for me is the Buddha touching the ground, the earth, when he is under the Bodhi tree and Mara is attacking him with all sorts of defilements and poisons and, you know, everything that would throw us, hook us and throw us off guard. And he reached down to the ground. And it was, to me, it's connection to the earth, connection to my heart, connection to the body, connection to something greater than myself. And we're very vulnerable, and it's hard to be equanimous if we've got all our eggs in the basket of the ego and the self. So we have to connect with something greater. So things of nature like the earth, to me, I imagine myself connecting to them. And then, you know, just even going for a walk. I know when my daughter, when she was not quarantined, but when we were really stuck in our houses at the beginning of COVID, and all her friends were in New York and she didn't have a job and she was living with me and she was pretty depressed. And she started walking every night, every evening, like 5, 6, 7 miles. She'd be gone for an hour and a half to 2 hours. And she would always come back like she'd gotten life again. And that was really, really helpful to her to keep her grounded and connected. So personally, I don't think we can underestimate the value of connecting to our body, connecting to our heart in whatever way works for us. Some of these images I think are helpful. And that helps us have that wonderful, wonderful saving quality of equanimity. And I'll just close with a quote from Pema Chodron. She says, when you begin to touch your heart or let your heart be touched, you begin to discover that it is bottomless, that it doesn't have any resolution, that this heart is huge, vast, limitless. You begin to discover how much warmth and gentleness is there, as well as how much space. So we'll take a few minutes now to do some guided imagery and guided meditation with the phrases and a few images, and try to connect with this quality of equanimity. So you can move around a little bit to get comfortable. And I'll start in about a minute. So these phrases, like all the ones we've heard today, are used to help us incline our mind toward equanimity, or each of the Brahmaviharas, in this case, equanimity. And I'll offer phrases that you may direct toward yourself when you might feel self-critical or frustrated. Some of the phrases can be directed to other people and situations you care about, but which you may have little control over. These phrases point the way to spacious, clear seeing, and acceptance of the way things are. So we'll begin by directing phrases to ourselves. Take a moment to settle your body and mind. Close your eyes or gaze softly downward. And just know where you are. Come to the present moment. Be aware that you're sitting. Be aware of body sensations. You're breathing. In your state of mind at this moment. Invite equanimity into presence. Balanced, unshakable, centered in the middle of whatever is happening as best you can in this moment. You might imagine a tree firmly rooted in the earth, or a spacious view from above, as if on a mountaintop. Connecting with your heart, how is your heart right now? And then accepting, this is the way it is right now. May my heart be open to how it is right now. May my heart be open to how it is right now. May I learn to see the arising and passing away of all things with equanimity. The feeling may be a pleasant one, and accepting that it will pass away. The feeling may be an unpleasant one. And acknowledging that it will pass away. May I learn to see the arising and passing away of all things with equanimity. May I be open, balanced, and peaceful. May I be open, balanced, and peaceful. You may continue for a minute or two on your own, directing phrases to yourself of equanimity. You can use any phrase that you've heard, or you can just use a word, balance, or open. Or peaceful. Or whatever feels right to you. Thank you. This is the way it is right now. May my heart be open to how it is right now. Now we'll move on, and this time you can choose a dear one, someone who's very easy to offer equanimity to. Reflect on your relationship to this person, the challenges as well as the joys. When you see this person in front of you, get a sense of your relationship to them. May I open to how my relationship is with you with balance and ease. May I open to how my relationship is with you with balance and ease. May I accept the changing conditions of our relationship. May I be open and balanced and peaceful in our relationship. Now this one is a little harder because you're continuing with a person that you care about, someone who it is easy for you to care for, but you're now offering with equanimity wishes you have for them, reminding yourself of the limits of your control over another person's life. This is often a hard one. So with equanimity, may I be open to how it is for you right now. Getting a sense of this person's situation. Maybe you have ideas about what they should do or what would be a good step for them to take. But we're letting go of that and opening to a broader view. May I be open to how it is for you right now. I care for you, but I cannot control your happiness or unhappiness. I care for you, but I cannot control your happiness or unhappiness. May I be at peace with your journey. May I be at peace with your journey. May I respect and accept that it is your journey, not my journey. May I be open to your journey. As we come to the close of our meditation, may we return to our wish for equanimity for ourselves. With the way it is right now, and choosing one word or two that you wish for yourself. Balance, peace, acceptance. Strong back, soft front. Whatever it is. So thank you for your practice and attention.